Welcome back to ABA Mom. I'm Allie, a board certified behavior analyst and mom of five.
And I'm Erica, a registered behavioral tech, and I'm a mom of two. But we're excited to have you guys join us today for a thought-provoking episode. And we're going to explore a concept that is gaining some traction in the field of applied behavior analysis, ABA, as control as a possible fifth function of behavior.
That's right, Erica. Well, we're all familiar with the traditional four functions of behavior, so tangible or access, escape, attention, and sensory. There's a growing interest in understanding how control might also play a significant role in shaping behavior.
Absolutely. So let's recap on the four known functions of behavior in ABA, as Allie mentioned. The first one I have on my list, we like the acronym SEAT. This is what we're learning in my master's program, S-E-A-T. That's an easy way to remember it. The first one is sensory reinforcement. It's a function of behavior that's internally rewarding without any kind of involvement from another person. Like an example would be hand flapping, rolling back, like rocking back and forth, humming. These behaviors occur regardless of any kind of external factors. The second is escape, avoiding a challenging task, overwhelming social interaction maybe, or even uncomfortable sensory environment. The third one is attention. This function involves seeking attention from others, whether negative or positive. It could be anything from smiles, a thumbs up, a reprimand, or in the classroom being told to like stop that. And the last one is access to tangibles. When a person wants to obtain any kind of activity or object, an example could be even just a child crying for a toy. When we give them that toy, it's reinforced, making it more likely to happen again in the future. So let's dive into what we mean by control as a function of behavior.
So control is essentially about the autonomy, the desire to assert influence over one's environment or situation. When individuals feel they lack control, they may engage in behaviors to regain a sense of power.
Exactly. Think about it in this way. When someone chooses or someone's choices are limited or they feel overwhelmed by demands placed on them, they might exhibit some challenging behaviors as a way to express their need for control.
Yes. And also, I really like how you addressed the other four functions of behavior, because control kind of goes with each one. So control can kind of, so it could be like access or tangible and control. It could be with, attention and control. So control can actually go, like, sometimes we have dual functions. So instead of just one function of behavior, sometimes we do have multiple functions for that behavior. So control can go right along with all of the other functions of behavior. So this can be particularly relevant for individuals with disabilities or those structured settings. Their choices are made restricted. So that happens a lot with people with disabilities. However, it can happen outside of people with disabilities, so it can happen to any of us. So where our choices are restricted, that's often where you'll see control. It's a natural human instinct to want to say in what happens to us.
Mm-hmm. Totally right. The need for control can manifest in a bunch of different ways. For instance, a child might refuse to follow a simple direction, and it's just to assert their autonomy, even if they want to do what's being asked.
So now let's talk about some examples. So one scenario might be in a classroom setting. If a student's frequently non-compliant or disruptive, it can be an indicator of their desire to control.
Exactly. If they feel like they need to say no towards some activity or task, they might act out to regain some control.
And that's why we're going to step in as behavior analysts and RBT. By providing choices, we can help empower individuals, which may reduce challenging behaviors. For example, allowing the child to choose between two tasks given or say and what activity to do next and make a huge difference. So we want to try to give that autonomy back. So giving the client choices. So sometimes it's two tasks or three tasks and just giving options between that. Or like if you're making a schedule with them, kind of saying, okay, so the next activity is blank, and give them a couple choices of what they can choose.
Yep. And to reiterate what you said, because I do think it's really important, you know, having a healthy environment that promotes autonomy from an early age too would be great. When individuals feel like they have control over their choices, they're much more likely to engage and less likely to have those maladaptive behaviors.
So let's discuss research that supports the idea of control and functional behavior.
All right. There's several studies indicating, and I'm in my master's program too. So that's why this is so interesting.
So helpful.
And several studies showing that individuals feel a lack of control. And I probably feel this on my day-to-day too as a mom. And they're more likely to engage in challenging behaviors. Researchers have noted that feeling of helplessness can lead to increased frustration, and that can lead to the maladaptive behaviors that we see.
Yes, and there's been a study that highlighted how individuals with autism who were given more opportunities for choice showed fewer instances of problem behavior. It's a clear indication that when people feel empowered, their behavior improves. So, and that's kind of one thing, you know, with all of the programs that I try to implement, I always say, make sure like you're giving them choices. Or something that I first say to parents kind of coming in, well, how many choices they make, you know, like coming from even just like picking out their clothes, like having them make a choice between picking out their clothes. If they, you know, like tablet time, that's a big one. So sometimes even giving like the illusion of the choice, it's like, so do you want me to turn off tablet or do you want to turn off the tablet, for example? So you're still giving that choice. So you're giving some of that autonomy back.
Yeah. Just a side example, because that just reminded me when my daughter was 3 and there would be a tantrum over shoes in the morning. And I feel like all moms, it's that.
Yeah, I've experienced that.
So it's just like, do you want the sparkly unicorn shoes or do you want the red shoes or whatever? Like you giving the choices to this day, this morning, it literally was like, do you want to wear your Lion King shirt or this SpongeBob shirt? And it's like, it helps. It gives an individual, you know, a voice, giving them that choice in their treatment plan and daily activities when they feel heard and valued. And it's feeling respected. And it could really impact their behavior for the positive.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I love how you said that choice, because I was even just thinking about this client that I had, going back to choices, that would make a choice. But then, for example, like picking out their clothes is a good one. So like they pick out their shirt the night before, like they're ready the next day, and then they would change their mind. So before leaving the house, like they would change their mind. And so, but the issue was, is that the parent was kind of stuck on like, we already picked this out, like you made the choice, like now it's stuck in stone. And I disagree with that. I don't think that we should have it like stuck in stone. Now, there's certain things like when I'm trying to rush my kids like out of the store and I'm like, okay, like we made our choice, like this is the last time, like you can kind of change your mind. But I think just having that opportunity to change their mind, I mean, if we're doing it like excessively, like, okay, now you've done it 20 times and now I think you've had plenty of control over this situation, changing your mind. But I think, you know, if, for example, like if I take my kids to the store and I say, okay, so, you know, pick out, you have $5 each. So go ahead and pick out the toy that you want. And then they change their mind. Like, I'm okay with that the first time, possibly a second time. But then after that, I'm like, okay, so that's our last kind of choice. So letting them kind of know that this is going to be our last choice, because we could end up at the store all day. But I think, you know, to like limiting that control, even though we want to, you know, give them autonomy, let them have some control, sometimes we got to take some of that back and say, okay, so like now we've made our choice, now like let's move on.
Yeah.
So what do you think that we can really take away from this discussion, understanding control as potential? Function behavior encourages us to look beyond traditional 4 functions and consider underlying motives and challenging behaviors.
I think by recognizing the need for control, we can create interventions that not only reduce those problem behaviors, but also enhance the overall quality of the life for whether it's the kiddos, the teens, the adults, whatever demographic age we're working with. We want to, overall, our job is to improve their quality of life.
Yeah. And for our listeners, we encourage you to reflect on ways in which you can incorporate choice of autonomy in your practice. Even small changes can have a big impact.
Absolutely. And we'd love to hear everyone's experience and how you have noticed control as a function in your work and what strategies you've implemented to promote that autonomy.
Thank you for joining us today on ABA Mom. We hope this conversation about control as possible fifth function of behavior has spoken to your interests and provided valuable insight for your practice.
Yep. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast for more discussions on ABA topics. And feel free to reach out to us on social media with your thoughts and any questions.
Until next time, keep advocating understanding and positive change in lives of those you support. And remember that you are not in this journey alone.